Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. I was away last week, so in consequence I have a lot more material this week, largely in the area of general news. And to add to the extra loading, it's one of those weeks when we have a new message from Matthew, so it's going to be a pretty full programme. As usual, I'll start off with the update from Sheldon Nidal for the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. It reads, "We return, dear hearts, with more to say about first contact. The current situation on your world is a balancing act between the dark, cabal, and our Earth allies. At present, our Earth allies are in the midst of a worldwide putsch, which is intended to topple the last remaining minions of the dark. In the last few weeks, a number of issues have been agreed to between these two groups. What has been causing untold delays is the Dark One's scurry-like morality. Whatever can be done surreptitiously to undermine any agreement they have done. The list of those behaving deceitfully in these matters grows longer by the day. To move these actions forward, we have dispatched a number of liaison personnel to referee these events and solve any potential difficulties that may arise. We are providing our Earth allies with intelligence and advice with the intention of ending the impasse that, in our opinion, has held sway on your world for far too long. Your global society needs to be transformed swiftly, and the present dilemma does not bode well for this to happen as fast as we desire. The overall progress is indeed commendable. However, the process of change on your world, while greatly accelerated, is still below the levels considered normal for an immediate pre-contact environment. These circumstances put pressure on us to do more than is usual to bring your world into compliance with the massive first contact planned. Thus, we have instituted a series of plans, which we touched upon in our last message. This new thrust allows our representatives on your world to be more proactive in ensuring that what is required gets done. This implies two things. First, we need to break the impasse mentioned. Second, we need to become a more engaged participant in the operations set up by our Earth allies. A number of contingency plans are in place, and early indications suggest that our initial proposals are doing a lot of good in moving a whole range of matters forward. It is not often that this degree of coaxing has been approved for carrying out the first contact procedure. And so this particular mission continues to live up to its most unorthodox nature. As we develop operational alternatives, we are also involved in assimilating data concerning you and using this to move first contact to its final stage, the landings. This can be tricky. We want to involve in this process all those of you who are using your abilities, contacts, and resources to get our existence formally acknowledged, and indeed, much is quietly being done to move this forward. Of course, what is needed goes far beyond this and requires a much quicker pace than the present one. We watch as the many tentacles of the dark squash any attempt to reveal the truth, which proves once again that only the substitution of the present regime by a friendlier one can resolve this insuperable obstacle. We have a number of tricks up our sleeve if current conditions stay as unviable as at present. We are also learning much about the degree of deceit extant on your world. All told, we know we require a strategy which promotes contact while simultaneously transforming the present impasse into a formula for mutual success. To this end, we have given our secret and overt on-planet operatives a veritable panoply of strategies. The strange, sloppy way that your Dark Ones operate means that we can use their modus operandi to flush them out of their present position of strength. Their arrogance and overt malfeasance can thus be used against them, culminating in a metaphoric situation of being forced with their own potential. A maxim from your world that fits the circumstances is, when handed lemons, make lemonade. Any crises on your world are currently awakening the populace and can be developed into a variety of preconditions for the removal of the present US regime. We are all about to be proved experts in the variety of techniques at our disposal for skinning the proverbial cat. The first step is to complete an updated and all-inclusive dossier of the Dark Cabal and its primary objectives. We need a complete profile of each member and a full list of their weaknesses and predispositions. Using this, we can do a thorough rundown of strategy options with a view to ascertaining the most effective one for our goals. This last cabal has grown quite panic-stricken over recent attempts to unseat them, and a series of new protective devices are currently in place. We need to come up with fresh insights on ways to make the most of this new intelligence. We also intend to extend our range of options to take in all possible routes to victory. This impasse poses a difficulty that nonetheless contains within it the seeds of its solution. These investigations of ours are merely another avenue of approach for creating the preconditions for first contact. The escalating lawlessness on your world reaches a point where a greater degree of intervention becomes necessary. The rising chaos is the smokescreen behind which this unconscionable group is hiding. The Dark Cabal is still convinced that, eventually, this chaos can become an asset, compelling our Earth allies to act hastily and imprudently enough to come a cropper. It is the intention of the Dark to lure the Earth allies into making an ill-considered thrust that can be turned into a defeat or a light. This strategy is clear to us, as is the reasoning behind it. Our plan is to counter this possible move and let the Dark fall into an abyss of its own making. Once the Cabal is weakened and has fallen on its own sword, we can then set up our Earth allies for victory. We can only impart the bare outlines of our strategy to you at this point, as success depends on keeping all details in the most stringent secrecy. As we continue down the path towards first contact, it becomes obvious that getting there is much more challenging than could ever have been foreseen. From this, you can see that your frustrations are equally mirrored by our experiences and actions on your behalf. Our intent, as ever, is to make first contact a reality as soon as divinely possible, and we are more than willing, literally, to move heaven and earth to achieve this goal. It is not as easy as many of you sometimes image for us to sit up here, far removed from your world, and looking down on all that is happening to you. You deserve so much better than the suffering and trials that daily surround you. We take your problem fully into consideration as we wrestle with the situations imposed on us by the nature of the customs, morals or lack of morals, and perceptions that govern your global society. First contact does not operate in a vacuum. We must reconcile myriad unique factors, fears, beliefs, realities. First contact is more than merely descending upon universe drove of ships. Rather, we are preparing ourselves, as is heaven, to complete a huge shift in your consciousness. This is being done in love and within the purview of the divine plan. Such an action needs a very special grand strategy. And this is what we are devising for first contact. Such an elaborate operation requires from time to time a certain amount of tweaking of details. And this is one of those times. Yet regardless of what phase we reach, the goal remains crystal clear. First contact is inevitable, and each day is a step closer to happening. Remember that together we are indeed victorious. And the message concludes, today we carried on with our discussion of the ins and outs of first contact. We explain what is delaying it and how we intend to compensate for this bump in the road. Our desire is to complete this first contact mission as soon as divinely possible. There ends the message. I think the point to note there for me is that they have indicated that they are likely to get more directly involved in our matters, I think so as to speed things along. Now I'm coming to our spot, which covers general news. Quite a few items, of course, a few weeks, bits and bobs here. Impeachment as a subject, obviously, will not go away for quite a long time, if ever your impeachment takes place. Posted by the Guarded Optimist on Tuesday, 24th of April, was a short note indicating that it was reported that the state legislatures of Illinois, Maine, New Jersey, New Mexico, Washington, and Vermont had introduced impeachment resolutions against President Bush. And it was thought that the Wisconsin legislature may soon join the list. There's evidently a lot more information about the states that are involved in impeachment, and you can find that on the website, spooneradvocate.com. An article about Ohio's Kucinich, who cancelled an announcement on the Cheney impeachment attempt, that was explaining why. And this report, which came through the Associated Press, said that U.S. Rep. Dennis Kucinich, who has been a frequent critic of the war in Iraq, cancelled plans on Tuesday, that was, I guess, when the day the report came out, which was April the 24th, to introduce articles of impeachment against Vice President Dick Cheney. And Kucinich, Cleveland Democrat, who is again running as a long-shot candidate for president, postponed the Washington News meeting because of Cheney's health concerns, he said in the news release. Under the House impeachment process, Kucinich's articles would be reviewed by the House Judiciary Committee, which would decide whether to conduct an impeachment inquiry. And then the committee will seek authority from the entire House before beginning proceedings. Yeah, just a short report there explaining why Kucinich cancelled the announcement on the Cheney impeachment. Again, Kucinich is being interviewed about the impeachment. This is in a separate report. I don't know the actual source, but some of the questions and the answers were interesting. Kucinich was asked a question as to why he was bringing the articles of impeachment against Dick Cheney and not George Bush. And the question was, why solely Mr. Cheney? And Kucinich said, well, there's a practical reason here, and the reason is, first of all, I want to say that each and every charge against Mr. Cheney relates to his conduct or misconduct in office. Now, with respect to the president, I think that it's very important that we start with Mr. Cheney, because if we were to start with the president and pursue articles of impeachment, Mr. Cheney would then become president. He said it's significant and responsible to start in this way, because if the same charges would relate to the president as relate to the vice president, he would then have to go through the constitutional agony of impeaching two presidents consecutively. He was asked some questions off mic, which were recorded, and in answer to one, Kucinich said, let me tell you the difference. The difference today is that this vice president is actively encouraging aggression against Iran. It is urgent that Congress take steps to check the abuse of power, and that's what this impeachment resolution will do. Kucinich continued, there is no comparison whatsoever in any way, shape or manner between these articles of impeachment and the articles of impeachment which were presented to the House of Representatives in 1999. In fact, these articles of impeachment are deeply researched, will stand up in a discussion in the House and in the Senate, and I believe that they are, that they're imperative to bring forth right now because the threat of war against Iran is very real. And this president cannot be permitted to continue to violate both the US Constitution and the UN Charter. So that explains a little bit more about the ideas behind the impeachment being carried out by Dennis Kucinich. There's been a lot of talk lately in reports in the press about George Bush seeking cooperation on US war funds, and from the Associated Press, Washington, came a short report saying that this Monday passed that he wants to work with the Democrats on compromise legislation to pay for the Iraq war, but will carry through on his threat to veto any spending bill that sets a timetable for US troop withdrawal. There you have it. We're not surprised, are we, that he's sticking by his orders to leave the troops in Iraq, because it's setting up a base for their global, or I should say Middle East, ambitions to control the whole area. Another news item related to Iraq and the Iraqi lawmakers who have today apparently demanded US withdrawal. Not sure where the report originated. Often happens, the email that I get doesn't always quote the source. But it reads that some 133 Iraqi lawmakers in different political blocs, calling themselves the Free Deputies, signed a document demanding a scheduled withdrawal of the US-led multinational troops from their country, according to the Sadrist bloc in Parliament. Now, in light of what I've just read, it would appear that's not going to get very far. But there is a footnote here saying that Bush promised he would leave Iraq when the Iraqi government asked. And here we are, they are now asking. So it will be interesting to see what his reply will be in light of that. A report that came from Melissa J. Rubin of the New York Times on Tuesday, 24th of April, relating to Baghdad, said that the unexpected outcry about the proposed construction of a wall around a Sunni Arab neighborhood has revealed the depth of Iraqi frustration with the petty humiliations created by the new security plan intended to protect them. American and some Iraqi officials are fairly taken aback by the ferocity of the opposition to the wall. And Monday, the 23rd of April, the United States are showing signs of backing away from the plan. Strong reaction underscores the sense of powerlessness Iraqis feel in the face of the American military, whose presence is all the more pervasive as an increasing number of troops move onto the city's streets. Violating the day, the American military, under pressure from the Iraqi government, appeared to be rethinking the plan. And, quote, "this one was obviously one in which the people in the area expressed some concern," unquote, said Brian Whitman, a spokesman for the Pentagon. "There are aspects of this that the Iraqi government feels at this point are not productive. We'll continue to work with them on this and other tactics," he said. That's the end of that little report. Not often you hear a lot about other countries protesting against the US policies in the Middle East. But apparently, at the end of April, scores of Swiss people staged a demonstration in Basel to oppose what they call the US warmongering policies against Iran and its peaceful nuclear program. And protesters carried banners featuring "no war against Iran." Iranian near news agency quoted the Swiss Schaffhausen and Nachrichten website as saying, "they crowed, organized by Swiss Labour and Green parties, were closely observed by the police, but no clashes were reported. Thousands of people, apparently in various countries, have taken part in rallies and gatherings on multiple occasions, and all have condemned US policies of harassment around the world." That's a short one there, but it's also true that in Great Britain there certainly have been some demonstrations of that nature. Another short report here from a source which I don't have, but I think we can take it as read, which came out on Monday the 30th of April, and it read as follows: "Eyewitnesses inside World Trade Center 7 reported explosions before collapse. And an eyewitness who evacuated W227 before its collapse reported an explosion inside the building before exiting by the lobby, which had been almost completely destroyed." before either of the twin towers had collapsed nearly 400 yards away from the WTC complex. This testimony severely undermines the flawed explanation that Building 7 collapsed as a result of the damage it sustained following the collapse of the towers, since the structure was seemingly being gutted by explosives prior to 9:59 a.m. WTC 7 was not hit by a plane, but collapsed in a perfect implosion in its own footprint at 5:20 a.m. I think I can accept that. But 9/11 will not go away, no doubt. Each week I run this program, I'll have little comments like that to make. It's quite apparent that more and more information is coming out, and for those that are collecting the evidence, they must have a pretty big pile by now. From Byron J. Richards of CCN, on the 1st of May, this came off the website newsreviews.com. It was an S1082 update talking about the Senate continuing to debate the big pharma-friendly sweeping reform of the FDA, which was a new problem for big pharma's prior senators, and erupted and quickly turned into a confrontation on the floor of the Senate. At stake is at least $10 billion per year in exorbitant big pharma profits. In one corner is big pharma puppet Orrin Hatch, representing the Kennedy energy drug cartel. In the other corner is a majority of senators led by Byron Dorgan. That issue is an amendment that Dorgan has added to S1082, one that is vehemently opposed by the authors here and by the White House. Dorgan's amendment calls for Americans to be able to purchase prescription drugs from other countries. This would bring an end to the big pharma price-fixing scam that has Americans paying at least twice as much for the same drugs. Hatch unsuccessfully pleaded with Dorgan, while attacking him, to withdraw the amendment, and Bush is threatening to veto the entire bill if the Dorgan amendment is part of the legislation. I ask, where have we heard about these vetoes before? Now, no sooner had I put this one in my folder for general news, and this was followed up by another one today. And just looking to see where this information came from. I can't see the actual source on here, but obviously it's a news source. And what it is saying is that, hooray, may I have this dance? We're safe until the next round. And they're talking about good news travels fast, your activism just saves supplements from being turned into untested drugs. Pharma will be back, but today we can do a victory dance. Thank you 435,005 times. That's the number of people who used our site to submit their comments to the FDA on their dangerous CAM guidance through our site. 182,484 succeeded, but since our site was interfered with several times, 252,521 people did not. We were working feverishly to submit those comments manually. So apparently there's one degree of success there, and it's all down to the numbers of people that are supporting these people who are fighting this legislature. Now, here's an interesting article which came out from the excellent website Truth Out, and it was by Thomas D. Williams. And it's talking about the Pentagon contractors who owe $7.7 billion in unpaid taxes. This report came out on Monday, 30th of April, and it reads as follows. A federal watchdog agency insists that its investigations clearly show the U.S. government is facing serious long-term funding shortfalls, while federal contractors, doctors, and medical suppliers regularly receiving federal Medicare money owe billions in unpaid taxes. Earlier this month, Comptroller General David M. Walker of the U.S. General Accountability Office opened one of his critical summary presentations to the Defense Department Acquisition Conference with, and I quote, The federal government is on a burning platform, and the status quo way of doing business is unacceptable. Society, and I quote, past fiscal trends and significant long-range challenges, selected trends, having no boundaries. Outlandish government funding, demands due to wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as natural disasters like Hurricane Katrina, outdated federal policies and practices, and finally, rising public expectations for results. And all to say that within the past 6 years, the government's long-term financial exposures in debt, health and social security have jumped 147% to $50.5 trillion. And if this trend continues, said the GAO report, federal spending will need to be cut by 60% and taxes will have to double to balance the budget in the year 2040. To close off this sweeping gap, the economy would demand double-digit growth for every single year for 75 years, he said. Meanwhile, a recent GAO inquiry reveals that about 113,800 contractors doing work for a variety of federal agencies, including the Pentagon and the General Services Administration, have built up $7.7 billion in unpaid taxes. He says this matches untidily with the March GAO report, saying that more than 21,000 doctors, health professionals or medical supplies, collecting billions in federal Medicare dollars, simultaneously owed more than $1 billion in federal income taxes. Federal agencies either have to rely on their hired contractors and medical providers to disclose what they owe the IRS, or dig out the data elsewhere in public record disclosures of the debts, said the GAO report. It goes on to explain that the IRS does not file public liens on the property of all tax debtors, nor does it have a central file where federal agencies can obtain those liens. So much of what the federal contractors owe the IRS arises from withholding taxes for employees, said the GAO. They actually gain a competitive edge over other contractors from not paying. That results from the tax delinquent contractors having more money readily available so they can post lower bids for federal work. That is what the GAO finally revealed. There you are, the report from truthout.org. Yeah? The report here that came off a new site to me, a new website, is called Commander-N-C, Commander in Chief. And it's referring to the 2004 Ohio presidential election. And it was penned by investigative journalist Greg Palast, who is author of the current best-selling Armed Madhouse and of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And he's introduced a documentary and also provides staggering information in the body of the film about the RNC's purposeful and targeted strategies for disenfranchising millions of minority voters across the United States, including African-American soldiers serving in Iraq. Now, apparently in Ohio, forensic evidence has been uncovered of ballot switching in selected rural precincts and of pre-punched ballots used to invalidate legitimate votes in specific urban precincts. And there is strong statistical evidence that as many as 5 million votes nationally were shifted, subtracting 5 million votes from Kerry and adding 5 million votes to Bush to produce a swing of up to 10 million votes in the officially recorded result. The outcome of this series of sickening schemes is that the wrong candidate was sworn in as President of the United States. The evidence presented in this documentary, called Commander in Chief, should be seen as a warning that our democracy is now in peril and ordinary citizens must act quickly and forcefully to restore honesty, transparency and verifiability to the American electoral system. And what if we caught here going, going to get away from impeachment, yet another one, penned by Camilla Sarasuare on Sunday, April the 29th. And she was saying that the kaleidoscope colours fitting well with the festive yet serious Beach in Peach event organised by San Francisco activist Brad Newsham. And she reports that the gathering was just one of many impeachment events held around the nation and world by individuals and organisations demanding that President George Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney be impeached for a variety of crimes ranging from 9/11, lying to start a war profiteering, illegal wiretapping and torture. This was Newsom's second impeach event, with the first one held on January the 6th this year. This time around, there was enough people signed up to add the emphatic now to the message. Asked why he felt it was necessary to do another event, Houston said, after January's speech in Peach, I felt like I had my fingers stuck in a live electrical socket. There was such a flood of great energy unleashed by that event and pouring light through me, and literally hundreds of charged-up people asking me, what are we going to do next? There we are. There's a man who's actively engaged in the impeach movement. Now, an interesting one here, brought from Tuesday the 1st of May, and it comes from the excellent site that covers what is now called the Watergate scandal or affair. That is from the website globalanalysis.net. But it's interesting to me because it refers to the Bank of England. And it's headed that the White House steals the Bank of England's gold. And it reads, blatant dislike of the British at the highest levels of this corrupt and reprobate American federal government has led to a catastrophic development, which was predicted to us by a US intelligence source known to this editor back in 2004. This source stated the British would be fleeced and cleaned out. This is exactly what happened on the 29th and 30th of March 2007. Behind the familiar smokescreen of preparing to settle, indications reinforced by the shutting down of the British financial system on Friday the 30th of March for at least 8 hours. The explanation given for public consumption to the British public was that it was necessary to test the new electronic transfer system. In the course of this operation, the Bank of England's Liang gold was diverted and resources valued at 4.8 trillion plus were expropriated, according to the European banking sources. It reads that during such a banking shutdown, there is no accountability and no recording of what transactions may be taking place behind the scenes. It has transpired that the purpose of the showdown, which caused massive inconvenience to the general banking public, was not to test a new system, but rather to enable the cynical criminal operatives at the White House and the US Treasury to consummate a pre-planned scamming operation for self-enrichment and geopolitical purposes in collaboration with the secret globalists at Deutsche Bank and elsewhere, and corruptive operatives and traders at the Bank of England. The European banking sources inform us that the Bank of England is now effectively bankrupt as a result of this economic act of war, perpetrated by the United States against its closest ally. The purpose of this operation will have been to tie the hands of the incoming British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, who intends to extract the United Kingdom from the European Union collective and to reassert its sovereign independence. But there you are, it sounds astonishing to me. Here we are a few days later, and if that be true, I can't quite understand why it hasn't hit the front page of the newspapers or been mentioned in any source at all. It hasn't, so we'll wait to see what happens there. A report from Washington from Reuters said in respect of the Hurricane Katrina that only $40 million of $854 million offered to the United States to help the Gulf Coast, to help the Gulf Coast recover from Hurricane Katrina has been used so far. And most of the offered aid was never collected, so the Washington Post reported in its Sunday's edition at the end of April. That's interesting, isn't it? Rather bears out the impression that has been given that no one is particularly interested in restoring that area. But that seems pretty sad. We don't hear much about it. but no doubt that will roll on a bit more. The next item I have here, just looking to see if there's a source, and there isn't one, except, well, yes, there's a website called shamanic.net, and it's a message from Jade Wahoo Gregory, and he said, I'm putting forth a call to join our hearts together for May the 2nd, 2007, to send a message of appreciation of honeybees. Now, I know May the 2nd's just passed, but I thought this was a very, very beautiful sentiment. And he was saying that honeybees all over the world, they are disappearing. Hives are empty, not even a dead bee to be found. Though the species refuse to take up residence in the old hives, no one seems to know why bees are disappearing. What we do know is that 60 to 70% of all honeybee colonies are vacant. We realise that without honeybees, the crops of fruits, nuts and corn, etc., do not become sufficiently pollinated to allow them bear fruit. It reads on and says, to read more, please go to Linda Moulton Howe's site, Earth Files. So there you are, if that article interests you. You know where to go, just search the Earth Files and you'll get there. An email circulated a couple of weeks ago by Richard Boylan, and he was saying that he had just received information from a key informant with affiliation to a three-letter government agency that a cadal-controlled installation which was manufacturing and then mentally go-going hybrid human clones to operate as its super soldiers had been eliminated. Now, I won't go into the whole report, but I will tell you that apparently, the BIT, who were given the operation of closing down this particular facility, which apparently is an enormous underground installation, 16 miles long by 1 mile wide, began operation some kilometers distant from the Icelandic village of Djúpadalur. And it took 13 years to build, having been authorized in 1993 by the US National Security Council, who had been duped into believing it would be a research facility concerned with nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. I'd say I'd want that next door to me. But instead it reads that this facility is a key part of Cardinal plans to build a super army of mostly human clones whose genetics had been upgraded with just enough retrieved star visitor genetic material to give these clones enhanced physical, mental and physical abilities. And this would then get the clone to mindlessly follow the moral orders. Apparently Colonel Dr. Michael Wolfe, operating independent of the military control, was so disgusted by the cabal takeover of key positions in government that he undertook a mission to penetrate this particular installation. So there we are. I don't know where you'd find the full report. Presumably, you could search for Richard Boylan's website and you'd find the rest there. Very interesting report. I'm not going into it fully, because that is my last item of general news, as I do want to allow adequate time to read Matthew's message, which is always extremely interesting. Have a look, as I'm going to get an opportunity to read anything else after that, but if we do, I've got one very short UFO report. Right, coming to Matthew's message. Now, they're always extremely interesting. I don't like to jump anything in it, but I've cut some minor things out so that I can get as much over to you as possible. Now, the message started with a comment by Matthew's mother, Susie, and she was funny enough talking about something we just mentioned. And she said, you know that many have written about the disappearance of the honeybees and also the shooting at Virginia Tech. Would you like to talk about it? So Matthew said, let us speak about Virginia Tech, because that is my sister's alma mater. For you, this personal connection with our family made the senseless killing even being more a tragic event. Your first thought of seeing the TV newscast was that the shooter was acting out of a mind control program, and I shall tell readers what I told you. No, he was not. Here's a dramatic example of what I have explained about the higher energies on Earth magnifying all human characteristics and feelings. He was a desperately tormented young man who felt that no one cared about him and that he harbored tendencies toward violence. But his feelings and those tendencies kept intensifying. Along with the energy magnification, he reached a point where he lost all sense of reason and value of any life, especially his own. And that is when he planned the massacre at the school. This is a part of the background in that happening. Another part is my reply when you asked me at that time, why did all those promising young lives have to end? And I told you it was in accordance with their soul contracts. Just as I left at a young age, because my Earth lifetime missions had been completed, so had theirs. At soul level, they knew that their physical deaths, like many other young lives seemingly cut short, will reverberate with lasting and profound goodness that collectively will evoke in humankind greater sensitivity and caring. The same is true about the professors who died. They too had completed their chosen missions, and their inspiring influence on many people did not end with that physical lifetime. I told you that pre-birth agreements are designed for the spiritual growth of all involved, and it is no different in the spiral ending of all those lives, including Cho's. They agreed to fill the role that would assist the others to leave when they had fulfilled their chosen experience. And of all the souls who moved forward that day, his entire Earth lifetime was the most difficult to endure. This is a related aspect of that happening, why Cho was so psychologically unstable. He also agreed to take on part of the psychic traumas that several weaker persons using the cumulative soul chose to experience, but were not sufficiently inured through the hardships of third density to complete them in one physical lifetime. By sharing their chosen lessons, Cho helped these personages gain the degree of experiencing the cumulative soul needed for overall balance. This allows is a form of divine grace that you could think of as similar to your buddy system in diving. And it is offered to souls in this unprecedented era of opportunity for rapid completion of third density experiencing. It is the same in soul clusters, where the stronger, more experienced souls share the hardest physical or emotional lessons that the weaker, less experienced souls need to balance and choose to learn. Please do not think this arrangement is unfair to the strong souls, or that the ones who receive help with their lessons did not actually learn them. There is an energetic leveling that provides spiritual growth for all in these shared experiences. None of the people involved are consciously aware of the cooperative effort. But when they return to spirit life, where all is known, they feel elation for successfully winding up third density karmic lessons and gratitude to all the souls who assisted them attain their goal. That's very interesting to hear Matthew's understanding of what happened at the Virginia Tech. Another question Matthew was asked was, following on that answer, when his mother said, Matthew, how much of the violence in our world is a result of the higher energies? Matthew said, I cannot give you a percentage of the violence in terms of deaths due specifically to this, but I can tell you that the opposite effect, the light generated by increasing the positive characteristics and loving feelings, far exceeds negative results. What happened at Virginia Tech is a much more dramatic example of how the energies of working and, say, those situations between mates or working colleagues, teacher and student, and friends. Yet in all these relationships, they are affected by the energies that, depending upon each individual's reaction, are either strengthening or diminishing the value of the associations. Furthermore, this magnification of energy forces is separating the wheat from the chaff, insofar as people's intentions. It is forcing them to choose between the light and dark. Everything in your world is in accelerated motion during this unique time in your planet's long history. And what I explained about balance is need for heavy rolls, notwithstanding, there can be no more things straddling. The infusion of light is called high conscience and conscience and heightening sensitivities. And those who resist and stubbornly cling to attitudes and actions that cause suffering for others are thereby choosing not to accompany Earth into fifth density. Feeling motive and action is not compatible with the higher vibration of Earth's ascension pathway. How can you know who doesn't go along with that because of that universal law about energy and who is living in accordance with soul contracts? How they ultimately are remembered. It doesn't matter if persons are international figures and are known only within their circle of family or friends. Whether their lives affected world events or only the people close to them, they are remembered in accordance with how they treated others. The lives touched by the light-filled souls are enriched and there will be widespread relief when tyrants die and no longer oppress nations. I emphasize ultimately remembered because you must realize that everything in your world that is considered unconscionable and divisive has been necessary for balanced experiencing. For millennia, all of you have played good guy and bad guy multiple times to achieve balance yourselves and help other souls do the same. You don't consciously know that bad guys helping one or many good guys achieve balance. That is why we have urged you not to judge anyone. Now, in the extraordinary era of winding up third density karma lessons, the extremes between good and bad no longer are needed, and the intensifying light is reconciling those opposites into itself. Remember, in light there is balance. And when you and Earth are in the vibration of where consciousness and soul merge, the full panorama of what now is known only at soul level will unfold. Matthew had stated previously that the elite were given enormous power, which they possessed fine agreement in order to create balance. And Susie asked, is it possible to get a more detailed explanation of the concept of balance in both general and planetary terms? Also, has that balance been attained yet? Matthew said, what you wrote, and this was in a reply that Susie sent to someone else who raised a question, and Susie wrote, quote, the elite were given the enormous power they possess fine agreement in order to create balance. And the concept of balance is a misrepresentation of what Matthew has said. First, balance isn't a concept, it's a universe in constant motion. In balance, there is light, which is one and the same, as it is love. Simply expressed differently, this light, come love energy, is the total essence of Creator. And the goal of all souls is to return to their origin in Creator. The aim of souls' multiple lifetimes is to fill gaps in experiencing or to master bodily characteristics so that overall, balance can be attained. Karma, unlike what some think of as reward or punishment, is the opportunity to practice those characteristics or to experience the opposite of the previous lifetime or lifetimes. In the latter case, for instance, someone who killed needs to know what it feels like to be killed. Someone who is wealthy needs to live in an impoverished circumstance. Someone who was a tyrannical leader needs to experience what it's like to be oppressed. The result of balance experiencing is spiritual growth or soul evolution. The incremental steps in remembering our origins in Creator and returning to that perfection. Prior to birth, the soul reveals its cumulative lifetimes and chooses specific genetic and environmental circumstances that will provide the opportunity to achieve balance to grow spiritually. Rebirth agreements make each soul and all principles who are affected by that life soul are designed for the spiritual growth of all, and what is chosen by each is that individual soul's contract. The souls who choose the harsh experiencing of deprivation and hardships need other souls to provide those kind of situations, and the latter souls also benefit, balance-wise, from playing out their heavy roles. However, many millennia ago, in our linear time concept, this win-win arrangement got out of hand because after birth, we don't consciously know what our souls chose and we make free will choices that aren't in our contract. So we need more and more lifetimes to balance the previous ones. Life on Earth became like a merry-go-round that kept spiraling downward until it reached the lowest part of third density. Earth is a highly evolved soul with a planetary body, and her karma is the collective karma of all her human residents. Throughout the millennium that they kept treating each other and the animal and plant kingdoms brutally, thus continually incurring the need for more opportunities to overcome their imbalance. Earth's body became correspondingly imbalanced. Her soul always was in the higher vibrations as her body descended deeply into third density where negativity, that is darkness, thrives. She gave her light to sustain all of her life form until her body was nearly depleted and so out of balance that her orbit became dangerously unstable. She had to decide whether to let her body die or ask for help. She asked for help and God authorized spiritually, intellectually and technologically advanced civilizations to respond to her request. That brings us to what has been happening for the past 60-some years. Those civilizations' infusion of light saved Earth's planetary life, and now is exposing and transmuting the negativity, which is the darkness, that so long had prevailed. Individuals who absorbed the light started generating their own. Thus, the light on the planet has been intensifying for over six decades. In this unique time in the universe, some souls agreed to fill the dark holes that would conclude all third density karmic experiencing. They also agreed that at a certain point, they would join the light. However, some of them became so entrenched in their power and greed that they knowingly and willingly reneged on their agreement to join the light. These dark ones are being exposed and their power is increasingly diminishing. But balance, the reconciliation of the dark and the light, or the positive and negative extremes of polarity, hasn't yet been achieved, as evident by the deception and corruption still coming to light, and the continued wars by the violence, as well as the unconscionable disparity between the haves and have-nots. But this reconciliation balance is happening as Earth is ascending into the high densities where light is so intense that darkness cannot coexist. Now, there's still a couple of questions and answers that I have to deal with, but I'll have to leave those until I next with you, which will be a fortnight today. I'm off from next Friday on an extended weekend break with my wife, Kathy. So I'll leave you at that for now. Thank you for being with me. I hope you're enjoying good weather like we are at the moment in the UK. It's sunny, although a slightly cool wind. I look forward to being with you again soon. Thank you, and may God bless you all.